When she woke in pieces. This happened often. She had to pull herself together. In her sleep, Chilatisa's body drifted apart. Her hands were always farthest, reaching for the window that was bolted shut, the window that faced the Duna River. She was invariably returning to the river. She assembled herself, letting the skin knit edge to edge, seamless except to those looking for the seams of her. Her shoulder touched and bonded again to her upper arm to her elbow to her forearm to her wrist bones to her hands. Only then could she curl her fingers against her palm, the fist sending a pulse of pain to her mind. That was how she knew she was connected again. The pain. Her eyes never left her skull. It was as if they knew better. They'd seen things out there in the world that they didn't want to see again. They'd rather stay here, beneath the quilt her mother had made, in the bed where her parents made her, in an apartment 1/4 the size it was when she was a child, when she was 1/4 the size she was now. Chilla's hair stayed attached to her head, too, moon-colored as it had been since the day she was born. It was luminous, catching and throwing the light like a prism, every strand reflecting and deflecting light, so it was impossible not to stare at the threaded lines on the walls that moved when she moved. She wore the river on her head. There had been little color left in Budapest since the end of the war. The Soviets marched in, and color marched out. In truth, by the time the Soviets arrived, the only color left in Budapest was blue, the color of the sky, the color of baby's eyes, the color of the thread in her father's talit, the color of her mother's favorite dress. Next to her, in the only bed they had, her aunt slept, mostly in one piece, as one body. Her aunt never drifted too far from herself. Chilla took a deep breath, pressing her hand flat against her chest, just above her left breast. Her heart beat against her palm. She was alive. Somewhere beyond this bed, somewhere beyond this window, the river whispered to her. She could feel the whispers in her chest, could hear them in her mind. When she was a child, before the war, before the river, her parents spoke to each other in Yiddish, a language they didn't share with her. This was how the river felt to her, a language that soothed her, a constant presence, but one she barely understood. When she was a child and her parents spoke Yiddish, she wanted to understand. By the time she was old enough to understand that they'd use Yiddish to speak about her or about things they didn't want her to hear or to fight, they'd stopped speaking Yiddish. Her mother had continued to speak Yiddish with her sister, Chilla's aunt Ilona, but that was the entirety of the Yiddish left after the war, after the Shoah. Soft words between sisters in the early mornings, over cups of coffee and in the bathroom, where one brushed the other's hair. When her parents died, so did the Yiddish in their home. Chilla had only the river left and its quiet, ceaseless murmurings. Still, as she did every morning, Chilla waited, listening to the apartment as if she could hear it speak, as if something might have shifted overnight while the earth turned slowly, as if time would rewind. She wanted time to rewind, but she didn't know where she'd stop it if she could. She'd go back to 4 years ago, before Stalin died, before her parents were detained and murdered by the Hungarian secret police, the AVH, for a crime she was sure they hadn't committed, the crime of dual loyalty, of Zionism. She'd go back 10 years, to her father's joining the Hungarian Workers' Party and the security services, working alongside the people who'd murder him 6 years later. She'd go back to a time when she did not know her father's crimes, revealed to her only after his death. She had not understood what an architect he had been of other families' destruction, until the place he built destroyed her own.